The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. Funding for Detroit coverage on The Takeaway is supported in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation.
Labor Day weekend was overshadowed this year, not by bad weather on the picnic, but by gloomy jobs numbers. The economy, as you may recall from Friday, created a net gain of zero jobs in August. And we wanted to float a couple ideas on how to solve the unemployment problem. And an old favorite is getting some new attention. It's a concept that actually surfaced all the way back in the 1930s, if not earlier, buying American. But is that actually a real solution to the unemployment problem? I don't know. One person who thinks it may be is Anders Lewandahl, a general contractor in Bozeman, Montana. Good morning, Anders.
Good morning, Celeste.
It's even earlier where you are. I understand that your current project is building a home entirely from American materials. Is that right?
Well, every piece in the house will be predominantly produced in the United States, yes.
So what's the concept behind that? Why focus on American-made materials?
Well, I'm sure it started with the recession. My son just graduated from college, and, I think it is a jobs thing. I've always liked the idea of buying local. I always tried to buy American products when it made sense. Building the all-American home is just an extension of buying local. So I asked my clients if they'd be interested in doing something like this, and their first impression was, sure, I'm really tired of buying stuff from developing countries that had poor working conditions.
Well,
I didn't think of that. And then someone else said, I'm tired of their inefficient power plants. So in the end, it was a social, environmental, and economic thing. That's how it started.
We're speaking with Anders Lewandahl, a general contractor in Bozeman, Montana. And also with us right now, Louise Story, Wall Street and Finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. You know, Louise, we've seen the Buy American campaigns surface and resurface over and over. Do they work?
Well, you know, they're a lot more complex and difficult to follow than it may seem, you know.
Sometimes hard to tell what's American.
It's very hard. In fact, I went online last night and I was looking around to see if I could find, you know, good guides of where products were made. And there are some guides out there. But what I found is that very few major brands come up. I mean, the brands that you probably buy every day come up with all of their parts made here. So sometimes you can find something made in America, but it was just assembled here, and it's full of parts that were actually made in China or made in Taiwan. And so it's really difficult to full-fledged do this. The other thing about it is that, you know, there are economic reasons. There's an economic theory of comparative advantage, why we have trade, right? You know, you wouldn't just buy something made in your own little town, right? You can see why sometimes a town two states over has an advantage making something else and you buy it. And so there are, you know, a lot of economic theories about why trade is good. And by the way, Americans buy other countries' things. Well, other countries do buy American products too. So, you know, you have to get your head around this bigger idea of whether buying foreign things is always bad or not. You know, another complication here, of course, is you might say, I'm going to buy an American car. That's one of the ones we think about the most, right? You know, we think about Detroit. So say, I'm going to buy an American car because I don't want to support foreign companies. Well, you know, a lot of foreign companies make their cars here in America. There's a lot of foreign companies that have plants here and hire Americans.
And
so
a lot of American cars have foreign parts in
and
them.
A lot of American cars have foreign parts. So it's very hard to separate this.
Well, let me ask you, Anders Lewandahl, you're trying to build a home completely from American materials. How difficult a prospect is that?
Well, let me say that we're not this isn't a nationalistic idea. There are other products that my clients use that for bamboo, for example, if they want to use that, it's not coming from America. So it's not about going 100%. I just want to prove the point that we can. And I did say it was predominantly produced. Luis is right. Virtually nothing is made 100% in the United States, but you can find products that are manufactured here.
Is it more expensive, Anders?
Not always. I'll give you an example. There's a few things that are hard to find: nuts, light bulbs, cabinet hardware, microwaves. As far as I can tell, no one makes microwaves in the United States. But nails. I knew they were produced here somewhere, but they weren't in my lumber yard. So, you know, with a little forethought, you know, we can go get them. But it turns out they cost $5 more in the United States per box.
The ones that are American made.
You know, for gun nails, yes. So I thought, well, we're not going to do that. That wouldn't make sense. We'd buy a lot of boxes of nails when we build a house. Well, it turns out the little plastic collations that hold the nails together, they're not formed as well in the Chinese product. They jam our guns. So if a guy, one of our carpenters, jams his gun three times per box, what's that worth?
Yeah.
I think it's more than $5. So we're looking for value.
That's Anders Lewandahl. He's a general contractor in Bozeman, Montana, building a house from all American materials. And you know, Louise, I mean, as you say, and I can completely understand that it's difficult to find any product completely, entirely manufactured and then assembled in the United States. But at the same time, to a certain extent, I mean, perhaps we have gotten a little far away from our locally made products. I mean, we have shipped a lot of our manufacturing needs overseas. I mean, perhaps we've gone too far the other way.
Well, you know, certainly there are a lot of calls to bring factories back to America. And you're actually seeing it happening in some of the lower income, cheaper to live areas in the U.S. Companies are building more factories slowly because they're finding they're cheaper than some places abroad. But the real thing is that, again, it's not so simple. You know, one statistic I found that was very interesting is the San Francisco Federal Reserve did a study about made in China. Because, of course, let's be open here. When you talk about not buying American, a lot of people are talking about China. That's right. Big on the radar right now. And they found that if you buy a made in China product, for every dollar you spend on it, 55 cents on average is going to American companies for distributing it, marketing it, selling it in the U.S. Because, you know, a lot of American companies like Mattel, the toy maker, for instance, remember they had those problems with their Chinese-made toys a few years ago, but they make a lot of them over
Thomas
there.
The train.
Right, and then they
paint.
Hire all these people in the U.S. who distribute them, who market them, who make advertisements for them. So again, even made in China is often sending profits to American companies here who are paying American workers.
Anders, does that discourage you at all?
No, and that's very true. Louise can maybe confirm this, but there's about 120 million families or consumers in this country, and they spend about $50,000 per family. That's $6 trillion of domestic spending. I'm asking people to reallocate 5% of their spending to American products. That's $300 billion. And let's use that number of 50% that Louise talked about.
We're going to have to end it there. That's Anders Lewandahl, a general contractor building a home. He's out of Montana, building a home entirely from American-made products. Louise Story, finance and Wall Street reporter for our partner, The New York Times.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.